1 Peter chapter 3, beginning at verse 8. Finally, all of you live in harmony with one another. Be sympathetic, love as brothers, be compassionate and humble. Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult, but with blessing, because to this you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing. For whoever would love life and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from deceitful speech. He must turn from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Who is going to harm you if you are eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear what they fear. Do not be frightened. But in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord, always prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience, so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. It is better, if it is God's will, to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. For Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. He was put to death in the body, but made alive by the Spirit, through whom he also went and preached to the spirits in prison who disobeyed long ago, when God waited patiently in the days of Noah while the ark was being built. In it, only a few people, eight in all, were saved through water, and this water symbolizes baptism that now saves you also. Not the removal of dirt from the body, but the pledge of a good conscience towards God. It saves you by the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven and is at God's right hand, with angels, authorities, and powers in submission to him.
My name is Josh Hawkins, if you don't know me, and I'm the Young Adults Minister. What that means is I go to a lot of weddings. Has anyone got engaged this year? Hands up. Yep. And anyone been married this year? Yeah, heaps down the back. We have a lot of weddings here at St. Paul's, so I attend a lot of weddings. I love them. They're nice. I love love. But I went to a wedding yesterday, unlike any that I've been to before, as an African wedding. I'm not African. Now, you might be a little bit confused, especially if you've seen me dance, because you thought, that guy's African. I'm not African. I'm Australian. I am not African, but yesterday I went to an African wedding, and it was wild. Now, I learned a lesson last time I went to an African party. Make sure you don't get there on time. So I definitely got there late yesterday. I was still heaps early, though. That was a joke. It was a funny joke, too. But does it make sense that I'm not African? This wedding was huge. 500 people at the reception. 500 people at the reception. And I was the only Milky Bar kid there. I was the only Caucasian person there out of 500 people. And it was amazing. I loved it. It was loud, lots of dancing. It was big. But here's the thing. Have you ever felt like you're a bit different? Have you ever felt like maybe you're on the outside? Maybe you're the only one? Now, as good as this wedding was, and as welcoming as they were, and as invited as I was, it was an African wedding. The whole thing was not in English. So I kind of sat there and laughed along when they laughed and everything like that. But does it make sense that I was on the outside? As welcome as I felt, I didn't understand what they were saying in the speeches. I didn't understand the music. It was an African wedding, and I am not African. Have you ever had those moments where you stick out? It feels like you're on the outside. We've all been there, right? You're in a group of friends. Someone pulls out an Android phone. Someone says they like Nickelback. Or maybe this one. Is anyone going to the new Star Wars movie? Got plans to go? Is anyone going to dress up? A couple of hands. I've never seen Star Wars. What do you do when you feel like you're the odd one out? What do you do when you feel like you're the odd one out? Now, if you've been here for the last couple of weeks, we're going through a series and it's called Exiles. We're going through the book of 1 Peter, and the reason it's called Exiles is because Peter is writing to the Christians of that time, and they've been exiled. Exiled from their land, exiled from what they know, where they were comfortable, where they were accepted. And they've been scattered to the surrounding nations. And it's possible that they might have asked this question, well, what do we do? What do we do now that we're the odd ones out? You see, for them, not only were they the odd ones out, they didn't live in a Christian culture anymore, but it was getting to an extent of persecution. Now, that prayer that we read out is for the persecuted church. And so it's interesting that it's still happening, even from back when Peter was writing this letter. Because they would have thought, well, what do we do now that we're not in comfort anymore? We can't meet together like we used to do. And some of us might be being persecuted, might be being tortured, at least hated or confused about what we believe. What do we do when we're the odd ones out? Now you might think, well, I'm glad we kind of moved from that point now. We're in Castle Hill, we're in the Bible Belt, we're in this cute little Christian bubble that we rule. But do you actually believe that's true anymore? Maybe 50 years ago, when the culture of Australia and the culture of Christianity kind of meshed, it was kind of the same. I mean, there was differences, but you would call us a Christian country. Would you call us that anymore? I don't think so. Maybe over the last 5 or 10 years, slowly we've been separating those two cultures. And maybe you've experienced this, maybe you've seen this, even sly little comments, or maybe just you see the media and you see how Christians are talked about on the media. If you've ever watched Q&A and there's a Christian on the panel, you see this, right? I got a clip from one of the Q&A episodes, and this one, it had Peter Jensen. Peter Jensen is the former Archbishop of the Anglican Diocese. And you might have seen this episode, but what I want to do is show you this clip, because after you see this clip, it's asking the question of what do you do when you're the odd one out? How do you live when you are the odd one out? Let's play it.
With the so-called, the seeming rise of noisy atheism, I'm wondering, Catherine, how are you sure that there is no God? And is there anything that would convince you either to give up on atheism and become an agnostic or a theist or even a Christian?
That's a really good question. I couldn't be a Christian because I'm intolerant of intolerance, but I don't think anyone could call themselves a 100% atheist. I believe that there could be a God in the same way that I believe that there could be a tooth fairy, a Father Christmas, or an Easter bunny. So it's all, there's no proof to it. But it's not only the...
So there's not an Easter bunny?
I'm sorry.
Oh. But tooth fairy?
For me, I mean, you can talk about proof and there's no proof. I mean, one of the things that I always think about is, like, if God exists, why doesn't he show himself? But when you actually look at the Bible, which is, that's the only text that I'm, like, religious text that I'm really familiar with, it is basically social engineering embedded in fairy tales and horror stories, which is just chock full of homophobia, misogyny, discrimination and division. And most people haven't even read it. It has been written by 60 people, I think, 44 chapters, you know, three different languages over thousands of years, thousands of different interpretations. So despite all of those different interpretations, the only thing they can all agree on is homophobia, misogyny, discrimination and division. So I'm sorry, the way that I see it has just been a very, very handy way to keep people in their place, particularly okay. Women homosexuals and people who don't believe what they believe.
Right, let's hear from the rest of the panel and I'll come.
So, how do you live in a world where you're the odd one out? Now, I've kind of split this video in half because you saw Peter Jensen next to this lady, and I want to see how he handles it. And we're going to watch that a bit later on. But how do we actually do that? Because you might have been in conversations like this, maybe at uni or with friends who don't believe the same thing that you believe. So how do we navigate this? How do we live in a world where we are the odd ones out? Well, I thought I'd be a good preacher tonight, and I've got three observations from the text. So, number one, don't punch them in the face. Love them in the faith. You like that? Don't punch them in the face. Love them in the faith. This is what Peter writes. He says, finally, all of you, be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate and humble. Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult. On the contrary, repay evil with blessing. Because of this, you were called so that you may inherit a blessing. He says, be like-minded and be sympathetic. Now, I love checking the dictionary when I'm writing a sermon because it draws out the words that Peter's using. Sympathy. It's harmony of agreement in feeling as between persons or on the part of one person with respect to another. It's putting yourself in someone else's shoes. In Romans 12:15, it says this, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn, live in harmony with one another. So we celebrate together, but we also commiserate together. And that's the heart of a St. Paul's small group. If you're a part of a small group, you know that's the heart of what we do when we meet. We celebrate together and we commiserate together. Be sympathetic, Peter writes. And then he says, love one another. What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. What is love? Well, after he says love one another, he says be compassionate and humble. And the definition of compassion is a feeling of deep sympathy and sorrow for another's misfortunes, accompanied by a strong desire to alleviate the suffering. So if he says love one another by being compassionate and humble, that love will be actioned to alleviate the suffering of someone else. This is how to treat each other, he says. This is how to treat not only us here at church, but the people outside of church. And then he says to be humble. And humility is having the power to get whatever you want, but only taking what you need. See, it doesn't put the focus on us anymore. It puts the focus on someone else. So he says, be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate and humble. You see the picture that he's painting here? It's other people focused. It's caring for other people's needs above ours. And then he goes on to say, do not repay evil with evil. He says, on the contrary, repay evil with blessing. Because to this you were called so that you may inherit a blessing. Don't punch them in the face, love them in the faith. Repay evil with blessing? Do you understand how crazy that is? Matthew 5:38 says, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Now, I don't know anyone who would go to the trouble of suing anyone for a t-shirt, although it's probably an episode of Judge Judy somewhere. But does it make sense how crazy that is that someone wants to sue you and take something from you that doesn't belong to them? And he said, in Romans, the response is, give them more. Do not repay evil with evil, but evil with blessing. In Romans 12:20, it says, to feed your enemy. Now, I think we have enough trouble feeding people that actually need it, but imagine feeding someone who actually hates you. This is what Peter is saying. Don't punch them in the face. Love them in the faith. So why not fight back? Why not get retribution for when someone persecutes us or someone says something against us? why not? Why should this not be our response? Well, firstly, because the Bible says so. If Jesus is the Lord of our life and he commands something, then we do it in humble obedience. But there's a second and more practical reason for why we should do this, and I'm not going to give it away. You've got to wait till the end of the message. But when Peter says this, he's saying, don't fight back, don't punch them in the face, but love them in the faith. That's how we live in a world where we are the odd ones out. Number two, be a peace-seeking missile. Be a peace-seeking missile. Now, there are a lot of good-looking people here. And I don't mean like a one or two. I mean everyone is looking fantastic. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if any one of us got scouted for a beauty pageant. And you're up there and, you know, they always ask that final question, what's the most important thing our world needs today? Now, Peter says be like-minded, so we're actually going to answer this together. On the count of three, what is the most important thing the world needs today? One, two, three. Peace. You got it right. See, five got it wrong. They were like, Jesus. It's like, no, world peace. That's the answer you give when you get spotted for one of these pageants. World peace. Peace and quiet. A little bit more peace in life. This is what I want to ask. Is your life peaceful? Where do you find your peace? Peter says to seek peace and pursue it. I wonder if you do that naturally or you've never even thought about seeking peace. Here's a little test of whether you do this naturally or not. When you have an argument with someone, what do you do? What's the one of the first things you do? Do you make sure the first thing you do is, man, I've got to fix this. Whether it was my fault or their fault, I've got to fix this. And you go seek peace between you. Or is it possible that your first response is, man, I've got to go tell someone about this. I can't believe the way that this person spoke about me. I can't believe what they did. So I'm going to go tell someone about it. Is it possible that that is our response? Because if we do that as Christians. We sometimes especially do that because we're Christians. You know, someone has a struggle with sin, and the first thing we do is we go tell someone else because maybe I'll look better because they look worse. What is our first reaction, our first response? Peter says, don't do it. Seek peace. Be a peace-seeking missile. He says, don't do evil, do good. Seek peace and pursue it. If you want peace in your life, seek it. See, a lot of things in this life you can't control, but you can control some things. And can I suggest, if you seek peace, you'll probably find it. You're more likely to find it than if you don't. And he says, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. That's a heavy statement. That God actually listens and sees what the righteous people do. And what that means is when we do good instead of evil, this is what Peter is talking about. But those who do evil, the face of the Lord is against them. And then Peter asks this question. Who is going to harm you if you're eager to do good? If you actually pursue this of doing good, who is going to harm you? I mean, it's a really good question. Who in their right mind would stop you from doing something good? Who in their right mind would hate you for doing something good? But you know, there's people out there that would do that, right? I read an article recently just after Mark Zuckerberg announced that he was going to give away 99% of his shares of Facebook. His profit throughout his whole life before he dies, 99% of his massive amount of gain from Facebook. Was everyone happy about it? Of course not. I read an article that said, nah, he's just doing it to get more. And they had some loophole of trying to understand what he was going to get out of this. You see, no matter how good you do or what you do, people are going to be against it. Who is going to harm you if you're eager to do good? But Peter says, even if they do harm you, even if they do harm you, he says, you are blessed. Even if you suffer for doing good, you are blessed. And he says, do not fear their threats. Don't be frightened, but in your hearts revere Christ as Lord. Do you seek peace? If not, why? If not, why? I don't know how people see you. Maybe you don't know exactly how people see you, but is it possible that you just love a little bit of drama? You get a little bit of a buzz when you got conflict. Or even you enjoy kind of seeing that in other people. People might call you like a drama queen, and you actually kind of like it. I mean, is that possible that that is how people see you? Can I ask why? Is that pointing anyone towards Jesus? Is that helping other people find peace? Is that helping you find peace? Peter paints this picture of something so much better. He says the character of a peace-seeking missile, a person who does good, not evil, who seeks peace, that the Lord's eyes and ears are attentive to this person. Why would you want anything less? Imagine if people spoke about you behind your back. But imagine if what they were saying was, Helena, man, that chick's awesome. I don't know what it is about her, but whenever she's in a group setting, it's just a bit more relaxed than normal. Whenever I've had conversations with her and told her some crazy stuff that's going on in my life, I always leave that conversation just a bit more peaceful about that. I don't know what it is, but she brings peace. Imagine if that's what people said about you behind your back. Wouldn't that be great? Peter says, be that person. Seek peace. Be a peace-seeking missile. And for the third and final observation from this text, this is my favorite one. I'm going to need your help on this because it's actually it's in a song form. So what I'm going to say is, show me the meaning. And in your best Backstreet Boys impersonation, you're going to sing of being holy. You ready? I know it's late, but are you ready? Okay. Show me the meaning. Boom. Point three. You can write that down. This is what Peter says. He says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. I'm going to show you the second half of the Q&A episode. Peter Jensen, you've heard what the woman said and how she said it. Let's see how he responds as a follower of Jesus. Check it out.
Well, let me just pick up on something that Catherine Devaney said earlier. Why are there no more miracles? Why is it that only in biblical days people got the proof they required to become Christians?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'd like to see an arm grow back on or a head grow back on, you know. One of the things that always amazes me...
No. This is his...
She is an interesting person.
If that
would answer my question, if I saw that.
Catherine... We're going to give the last word to Peter Jensen on this subject.
Okay. Has God shown himself? Yes, I believe he has, and I believe he's shown himself in Jesus Christ. I believe if you want to know, examine his life, examine what he said, examine his miracles, and that's where the big issue is. Come back to Jesus Christ and examine his life, examine what he said, examine what's around him. I have to say that Catherine's account of the Bible is as fanciful as a tooth fairy. It's got no bearing on the reality of the Bible. Yeah, I've read it a bit. And really, the big story of the Bible is just as simple as anything. Jesus Christ came into the world to save us. And he is God amongst us. What more could we ask? It's the most gracious. I'm so sorry you've got your view of it.
You said, what more could we ask? Equality. That would be good.
Well, we've got it, because every
I'm
man
sorry,
and
a white middle-class man like you does have every... it. Try being disabled, try okay, being an right, asylum Catherine. Seeker, try being gay, sorry, try no, being a no, woman. Okay, you'll right. find it's not there.
Sorry, I said we'd give him the last word. I didn't
yeah,
mean...
Well, I think
the last word is that in Jesus Christ we have that equality, and in Jesus Christ we have that salvation. And all I can say is the most wonderful... that the love of God for everyone, no matter who they are, no matter how they've lived or whatever, is the greatest reality in the world.
Okay.
So I asked the question, how do we live in a world where the odd one's out? I get a bit funny about Christian debates, you know, Christians versus atheists, because I just fear, I like cringe every time I watch it. For the Christian, they might come off as foolish or dumb, or probably even worse, just being like a jerk. Now, I think Peter did really well, but does it make sense? He didn't actually win anything. I mean, it wasn't a formal debate, but he didn't really have time to go into the woman's understanding of the Bible or even of Christians or himself. He didn't really win the argument, but sometimes it's not about winning the argument. I get the feeling that he won, but in a different kind of way. He won in the way that he carried himself. He was completely silent as she gave her opinion on Christians and the Bible. I think he won in his patience with that. He won in his gentleness. I think he won in respect, giving her the time to simply say that. And to borrow a great line off Keith from this morning's message, he said, when you follow Jesus, a win looks really different. And we see that. If you look at Jesus on the cross dying, and people see that, he's like, that's a loss. You've lost. But you know that that was the biggest win that we could ever have. When we follow Jesus, a win looks different. And there's two parts to what Peter says in this. He says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks for the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. And this is what I love about this picture. In this picture, someone has noticed you. Someone has noticed that you have hope. And not only that, but they're so attracted to it, they've actually come and asked you to give the answer for why you have this hope. They're saying, I don't know what it is about you, but I need to know where to get it. They're drawn to you, and they actually ask you that question. And I wonder, what would you say if someone asked you to give the reason for the hope that you have? What would you say? What's your story? Why are you here? What difference has Jesus made in your life? If you're a Christian, why? What hope do you have? So remember, we asked that question and made that statement of don't punch them in the face, but love them in the face. Don't punch them in the face, love them in the faith. But the second reason, I said there was a more of a practical thing that comes with doing that. And this is the second reason. When someone punches you in the face, I hope that hasn't happened to you before, and instead of punching them back, you bless them. Not only will that person be very confused about why you did that and want to know why, but the people around them, the people that see whatever that event is, that will spark their curiosity. Peter says, keep a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against you, against your good behavior, might be ashamed of their slander. See, the good thing about our world is we generally have a good concept of what's right and wrong. And that's because we're made in the image of God. We've got that. We have a common sense and this understanding. So when we do good, the world actually notices. I was just in New York, and every street corner at the moment has the Salvation Army. And in New York, it's like next level. They got like a boombox. They're like pumping music. They were dancing like their heart out. And they had a little bucket and people would just put money in. And you've got to understand, Salvation Army is a church. A church that does good things, like Anglicare is doing good things here. So the world notices when we do good and they actually see that it's a good thing. And this is what Peter says in a chapter before. This is what he says about doing good in the world. He says, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they might see your good deeds and glorify God on the day that he visits. Show me the reason for being holy. Why are you the way you are? Why do you treat people differently? Why do you not react the way that other people react? And how much more do we need this today? That second part, do this with gentleness and respect. See, we're living in a world full of opinions. I mean, just check out Facebook. Everyone has an opinion and they're keen to share it. And even us as Christians, it's so easy to post an article on Facebook about this is why I believe what I believe. This is why I don't believe the things that that guy believes. It's easy to do that, but you've taken away the element of gentleness and respect. Because Facebook's impersonal. It's not a conversation between people we love. It's a statement. And then sometimes turns into a little debate, which isn't very helpful for anyone. He says, make sure you do this with gentleness and respect. See, we are called to speak truth in love. Always truth, but always in love. And today I see a lot of truth. A lot of truth, but hardly any love. In a time in our world where Christians are known for what they're against, and I think that's where we're at right now, imagine if we could be known as those people who didn't punch back, but loved us. Man, one day I'd love to ask what that's all about. Imagine if we were known for that. How do we live in a world where the odd one's out? We love people, we seek peace, and we share our story gently. Friends, as we go out and love people, as we seek peace and share our story, I guarantee you, actually Jesus guarantees us that we will be hated. We may even face persecution at some point, but when Jesus was put to death, his spirit was made alive. He defeated death, and through that, he gives us the same victory. We have nothing to fear. Go and love the hell out of people.